Broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to heritageradionetwork.org. Today's program has been brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com.
Good morning and welcome to Taste Matters. I'm your host, Mitchell Davis, and every week at 11 o'clock on Wednesdays, we talk about taste. Every week except last week when it was, of course, July 4th, and I hope everybody had a great holiday. I'm sure you ate some delicious things. Actually, it was kind of a nice change because there were kind of two weekends of holidays, which I think was doubly celebratory. And today we have a really interesting conversation in store. We're talking with Jeremy Bierman, who is the chef of Rouge Tomate, and Christy Lambrew, who is one of the staff nutritionists at Rouge Tomate. And we're going to be talking about their really unusual and wonderful restaurant in Midtown Manhattan of the name Rouge Tomate, no surprise, although a lot of people can't seem to pronounce it for some reason. And welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Good. Tell me a little, why don't you explain a little bit of the background of, or the idea behind this unique restaurant, because I do think it's very unique, and I think everyone's going to want to hear a little bit about it.
Yeah, well, the first Rouge Tomate actually opened up in Brussels in Belgium in 2001, and the owner wanted to create a restaurant that had a mission and a culinary philosophy that is born out of the phrase sanitas per escum, which means health through food.
You guys really don't like people to be able to pronounce anything, do you?
No.
Not at all.
Why didn't you just call the restaurant
that?
We
try to make it easier by using the acronym SPE.
Okay.
So we'll just use that for short from now on.
And
he really wanted to show that we could break the barrier between nutrition and gastronomy, that the two are not mutually exclusive. So, you know, he wanted to show that we could have a restaurant that had a collaboration between a chef and a dietitian.
Okay, Jeremy, what do you think of that idea? What did you think of that idea, and what do you think of it now? How long have you been there?
Well, I'll be honest with you. My job that I had before this was at a steakhouse. We served, corn-fed beef and, the rest of things. It was out in San Francisco. It was, still very farm to table. Because obviously that's, the way of life in Northern California and for California for that matter. And so when I was approached about this job, actually took me about, I don't know, let's say maybe 2 months or so to really decide whether this is something that I wanted to get involved with. It was this big restaurant, 15,000 square foot restaurant on the bottom of Central Park. And it was going to be, pretty high profile. Any restaurant that's that big and, with that much, is going to be that high profile. And I said, well, tell me about it. And they started to talk about this nutritional aspect of it. And, I'd come from working, with French chefs and lots of butter and cream the rest of it. And, and actually, I think at one point when we were in our discussions with the owner his vice president, basically, or one of his the people who brought me on board, I think I actually declined a job at one point. And I was kind of just, it was very difficult to kind of get a grasp of what it was going to be about. I was talking to these people who are from Belgium and they've never opened a restaurant in New York before, and I'm out in California, and so it was just very difficult. But as I start to hear about it more and more, I became much more interested in it, and I thought really it was just a great idea to see, whether that could be done, whether you could take sort of gastronomy or the type of food that we do in our restaurants
at a very high level
and meld it with a level of nutrition that hasn't been seen before. And more after I talked to them and started to really understand the details, I got really interested in it. And I came and did a tasting here in New York for them. And I actually decided, they didn't ask me to do it, but I decided to do that tasting sort of within those guidelines just to see if I could do it, if I could cook like that with, more and more. So, we sit here 3.5-4 years later, and, now it's one of those things that's really opened my eye to flavors and to taste and to food a bit more, because I think you don't have that opportunity to just kind of reach in your back pocket and throw the butter in and throw the cream in and use things that are easily make food, taste or taste great or textures feel great. So you have to figure out other ways and ways to bring out the true flavor of fruit and ways to gain textures without using those things. So I think it's become really rewarding. Hmm. And I think that as chefs, we always look for that. We always look for something that is challenging.
Right.
You know, because you don't want to just keep on doing the same thing. You want to challenge yourself, whether it be different cuisines or different, you know, regions or things that you know, different things that you cook, instead of just doing the same thing all the time, whether it be casual to fine dining to,
right.
You know.
So, Christy, you are a registered dietitian, yes. But you also have a culinary degree. That,
yes.
That must set you apart in the world of nutrition, I imagine.
Somewhat. I think now I see it more and more that people are combining the two. But I really, you know, right out of college, I couldn't decide whether to go to culinary school or get a master's degree of some sort in nutrition. So, you know, I had always kind of toyed between the two. Mm-hmm. But, you know, didn't necessarily want the lifestyle of a chef.
Right.
So I was luckily able to combine both in a way that, you know, I'm able to focus on nutrition, but through food.
So let's talk about that. I mean, some of the things that Jeremy said, is there anything inherently non-nutritious about eating at a fancy restaurant that is not Rouge Tomat?
Well, I think, you know, one big part of cooking healthy food is choosing great ingredients and healthy ingredients. Mm-hmm. And that I think a lot of people do. Any farm to table restaurant you go to, you'll see a lot of produce on the plate, and that's certainly very healthy. And, you know, the way the animals are raised and the proteins they're choosing are certainly healthier for you. But then if you're preparing those vegetables with bacon fat or loads of butter, which, mm-hmm. yes, tastes delicious, it's not necessarily healthy for you as an individual.
And I think it's a lot about balance as well.
Yes.
Because a lot of what makes our food sometimes healthier than others is sort of not just what we're sourcing, because everybody's doing wonderful sort. A lot of great restaurants are doing wonderful sourcing now. That's nothing new. It's, you know, it's what we aim for, you know, as great chefs to do. But what makes it more nutritious is balance, because it's, you don't come into our restaurant and have a dish that, you know, has a piece of meat with a piece of foie gras in it and one little turnip, mm-hmm. and some jus and you know, and a little crisp made from, you know, something that has cheese or whatever it is. You have much more of a balance. It's, you know, it has a fruit component maybe, and it has a vegetable puree, and it has a vinaigrette to it that's been made from reduced carrot juice or beet juice, or it has these components, and we're always looking for ways to try to, you know, take the ingredients that we have, whether it be, you know, used ingredients that have different color or vegetables that have different colors, because they all have different nutrients to them. And sort of, so it's a lot about the way, you know, because people always come in and say, you know, are there special techniques that you use to make the food really, you know, healthy? And a lot of it really is just choosing what you're going to put onto the plate, mm-hmm. and how you're going to do it, and then also preserving nutrients, mm. when you cook, because there's a lot of different ways to preserve nutrients.
Yeah, it's not that one ingredient is necessarily healthier than another. It's just knowing where to use it, where and when to use it. So, you know, there is a place for butter. We just don't
Indeed.
Give it at every course.
Exactly.
We just don't give it at every course in the meal. So we feel that, you know, in desserts it may be.
Yeah, it's a very easy way to add a lot of saturated fat to your meal, and adding butter. And there's other great ways to achieve flavors and textures without doing that, mm-hmm. and using better oils, hazelnut oil, mm-hmm. and pistachio oil, and, you know, I mean, most people don't understand that duck fat actually has almost the same nutritional composition as olive oil.
Hmm.
You know, so make a crust with a pie crust, mm-hmm. with duck fat instead of butter, and you've
Did you hear that, nutritionists at home?
Yeah, and you've actually taken out a lot of the saturated fat.
Or even foie gras, you know, that it actually has a lot of unsaturated fats in it, and most people wouldn't necessarily think of it as being a healthy ingredient.
Right.
A lot of misconceptions, you know.
Indeed. So let's with that in mind, let's remind folks listening that you can actually call us with questions about the nutritional aspect of this, the taste aspect of it, or anything else you want to talk about related to this intriguing concept of a restaurant dedicated to sort of haute gastronomy and also haute nutrition. And you can call us at 718-497-2128, or you can send us an email with a question at info@heritage.org. tastematters@radionetwork.org, or you can even tweet us at tastematters_hrn, especially if you're listening to this as a podcast, where we welcome your tweeted questions and we'll try to get to them either on Twitter or on the air. So, Chrissy, let's get back to this concept of balance and talk a little bit about what exactly we're balancing besides the colors and the the flavors. I mean, what does balance mean, and how do some of the trends or the fads, let's say, that we hear in the popular media about nutrition play into what you're doing or not play into it?
Yeah, I mean, our nutritional guidelines, we actually have a 90-page nutritional charter.
Which everyone has to read before they get there. No, just kidding.
Which is, we have a scientific committee that's made up of different nutrition experts, dietitians, and we use guidelines that are based U.S. dietary guidelines and international guidelines from the World Health Organization. So there's a lot of science that goes into the background, of the nutritional guidelines. So we don't necessarily follow the trends, but we are keeping up with current research in the field. So when we translate that to the plate, that really means that we're looking at a big emphasis on produce, like Jeremy said. So, we make sure that there's a certain amount of fruits and vegetables on each plate.
Food synergies. Yeah, which is actually the part where Christy, comes and has taught me a lot, because those are the kind of things that most chefs don't really know much about.
Well, yeah, so one part is looking at, the balance of protein, carbs, and fat on the plate. Mm-hmm. But the other part that we really like to emphasize, as Jeremy's saying, is the enhancement part, which is food combinations. So certain foods that may be healthy for you individually are even better when they're combined.
For instance?
For example, if you have plant foods that are rich in iron, like legumes, you actually absorb the iron in plant foods much better when you have vitamin C with it. Oh. So if it's a vegetarian based dish, we will pair something like lentils that have a lot of iron with something that has vitamin C, like citrus or raw tomatoes. Cooking methods are also another aspect of the enhancement part. Certain nutrients you absorb better when cooked and with a little bit of fat, like the antioxidant lycopene in tomatoes. So you may want to have some tomatoes in a cooked form to get the lycopene, and then some in a raw form to get the vitamin C.
So I find all of this fascinating. As you've witnessed me become fascinated by it, because one of the things that I think is hard to communicate, even in this conversation, because it could be a little scary if you're listening at home, is how beautiful and delicious everything is. I mean, from what we're talking about, you might imagine walking into the Moosewood restaurant in Ithaca, New York. We were just talking, Jeremy and I both went to Cornell. Or you might imagine, I don't know what you might imagine, that smell of a health food store from the 80s that had that sort of weird vitamin and brewer's yeast smell.
And it's such a contrary, because I think what we learned, especially in the first 5 or 6 months of being there, is really to focus on the fact that, it's a restaurant first and foremost, and it's, we try to achieve everything that any other restaurant at our caliber does, which is service and great service and a great, experience.
Taste
and flavors and textures. And I think actually most people, I'm not sure whether it's most people now, maybe it was a couple of years ago. A lot of people that come to the restaurant know nothing about it and walk out sometimes knowing nothing about it.
That's the question we just got from one listener who asked, does the average Joe or Jill in the public know about the nutrition aspect of Rouge Tomat?
I answered the question before.
Do you actively advertise this? Does it matter as long as the food tastes good?
Well, it doesn't matter how healthy it is. If it doesn't taste good, nobody's going to come. So that's always, a primary focus.
We're here in New York City. I mean, we're not kidding.
That's what we decided to build, to build the restaurant upon. It's really something where, the people who do know about it, they love it because they can come and know that a lot of the things that they care about are sort of taken care of in terms of sustainability and sort of, farm-raised and no antibiotics and all these kind of things. But, for those average person that comes, they come and they have a great meal and they leave saying, wow, that was an incredible experience.
But people do comment on, they know something's a little bit different about it. They might not be able to pinpoint it at first, but they feel better after leaving. One comment I've heard a lot is that they taste the individual flavors a lot more of each ingredient on the plate. Because one part is that we don't use a lot of rich sauces. Sometimes we use a lot of reductions, from fruits. So you'll see a lot of repetition on the plate, you know, seeing one fruit that's like nose to tail but with vegetables, you know, you'll see a lot of
stem to root.
You know, you'll see the beet, then you'll see the beet green, and then you, there might be a vinaigrette made out of the beet juice. So you'll see a lot of repetition on the plate with that.
Well, while everyone's thinking about delicious things that they might conceive of from stem to root, let's take a quick break, and we'll be back with Christy Lambrew and Jeremy Veerman of Rouge Tomat in New York City.
Ranch grass-fed beef, pasture raised on 150,000 acres in Central California. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, free-range, sustainably produced, humane. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, the authentic flavor of the American West.
And we are back. Taste Matters with Mitchell Davis. I'm talking with Chef Jeremy Veerman and nutritionist Christy Lambrew, who collaborate in the kitchen at Rouge Tomat, a wonderful restaurant in Midtown Manhattan, at a very high gastronomic level and quite a high price point. But perhaps you might say that the highest nutritional bang for your buck when you're eating at that level. Let's talk a little bit about the menu, Jeremy. Tell me some things that describes, I mean, beyond the ideas of balance and nutritional parity and maximizing the value, what are you cooking?
So let's see, right now we're doing a really nice octopus dish. We do a Spanish octopus. We braise it. The octopus that we buy is really, really nice. It's actually been tenderized first. And we braise it with basically Moroccan-style spices, so things like cinnamon and paprika and coriander, cumin, garlic, cilantro. And we braise it with that, and then we basically use that braising liquid. Once it comes out, we roast the octopus, and we use that braising liquid to glaze over the octopus. And we serve it with this really nice salad. It's a salad of three different types of chickpeas, actually. Fresh green chickpeas, black chickpeas, and white. So three.
I didn't know there were three different kinds of chickpeas.
Yeah, three different types of chickpeas: wow. Black, white, and a fresh garbanzo beans. We make a little salad of that with some Belle de olives, which are these Moroccan dry cured olives. Dried apricots in there, and then we make this really nice vinaigrette. We take the actual braising liquid from braising the white chickpeas, and we reduce that down. We were talking about reductions before. We reduce that down, and then we emulsify that with a little bit of lemon juice and some what's called argan oil. Argan's a nut from Morocco. Sort of the North African Moroccan region, and has a really wonderful flavor to it. And we use that vinaigrette inside with the chickpeas and the apricots and the olives and some pieces of cucumber, and then we do this really cool carrot and honey and lemon puree on a plate.
Wow.
Yeah, so you have, you know, lots of different sort of textures and flavors going on,
amazing.
Which is really nice.
I'll remind people again, the number to call in is 718-497-2128, or you can write us at info@heritageradionetwork.org or tweet us a question at TasteMattersHRN. So I know that for 3.5 or 4 years now you've been working on this project at the restaurant, but fortuitously for us, because you who are scheduled before we knew this was going to happen, in the current issue of Time Magazine, the July 16th issue, that's all about the healthcare, the state of healthcare and the Obama healthcare bill, or I guess judgment from the Supreme Court. There's an article here that explains how you guys are going out there and wanting to spread what you're doing in the form of a certification process or consultancy to help other restaurants come on board. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, our owner, Emmanuel Verstraten, decided this year really to launch a certification company. And it's similar to what LEED certification is for buildings.
Okay.
And they're trying to do that for restaurants and really any food service establishment that wants to serve healthier food. Using the same nutritional charter guidelines that I mentioned earlier, they're working with all kinds of cuisines, you know, different chefs and restaurants all over the country right now to try to get them on board and help them, you know, either have specific dishes on their menu that are SPE certified, you know, or work with them on a consulting basis.
It's part consulting and part certification, but basically going into food establishments and showing them how they can add a level of nutrition to the food that they're already doing without losing the integrity of who they are as a business.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, nobody wants to come in and change what they're doing, and all of a sudden you don't have what you started out with.
Right.
So the key is really to be able to go in and do it in small ways that people wouldn't notice, but to add that level of nutrition to it.
And we're not talking, you know, fortifying with vitamins and minerals.
No, definitely not.
Okay.
I mean, it's a whole foods approach. And you know, it's really looking at ways that they can boost the nutritional density. So it's basically improving, you know, having more quality fats and more produce and whole grains and, you know, but tweaking things. It's not going in and saying, you know, you have to serve, you know, have this menu completely revised. It's just working with those chefs and within the framework of their specific cuisine and style of cooking to just tweak the dishes to make them better for you, but without compromising taste.
Jeremy, when you're not in the restaurant, do you find you cook and eat differently?
Yeah, a lot, actually. And I kind of almost at the beginning, I said, I don't really think I do, but I've realized now that I do. I focus a lot more on fruits and vegetables. I feel like they're just, I don't know, it's more interesting cooking them.
Hmm.
You know, I definitely still like, you know, all the other things. You know, we on this trip we were on over this weekend, you know, sitting eating fried chicken and homemade tater tots and things like that. It's, you know, I still love all that. But I think when I cook for myself, I can't remember the last time I used a stick of butter in cooking. You know, and so it's kind of like when I say that, it's almost sort of odd, you know,
right.
But definitely it's more fruits and vegetables, I think. But by no means am I, you know, vegetarian or vegan. And I love eating meat.
Right.
And I think it has become a lesser part of my diet.
I'll explain a little bit what you were alluding to, since Jeremy was with me and some other chefs and colleagues this weekend at Blackberry Farm in Wallen, Tennessee for this new thing the James Beard Foundation is hoping to launch, a chef's boot camp on policy and change. And the idea was to bring a group of people together and help give them some tools and inspire some chefs to take some of the things they care passionately about and help take them outside the operations or their day-to-day or their communities even and bring them to a regional, national, state level and help advocate for some food system change if that's their interest. So I wonder if you guys could think, I mean, I know that you have a consultancy here, but do you think there are policy implications for this kind of thing? I mean, there's so much talk now about the quality of nutrition and food in the school system and even in sort of contract feeding and all that kind of stuff. Is that the hope, Christy, that this will help?
Yeah, I mean,
I think it's, you know, it's tough when you start to talk about, you know,
sure.
Policy with things like this, because we're not trying to, you know, push people to do things in terms of nutrition. But I think definitely when you talk about schools and when you talk about
hospitals
or things like that, I think that what we offer could sort of kind of lend itself towards some advocacy work in terms of trying to change policy of you know what is actually nutritious to be eating, you know, in those spaces.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think there's a lot of misconceptions and about what it means to eat healthy and what a healthy diet is. And I think, you know, that's, we get a lot of assumptions from people who aren't familiar with the cuisine when they hear that we serve healthy food. They either assume it's raw food or vegan or vegetarian,
no,
you know.
No carbohydrates.
Right, no carbs. So people have, their own assumptions about what it means to be healthy. And really, you know, our guidelines are based, like I said, on science and dietary guidelines, but it's really a Mediterranean style way of eating, you know. It's not low fat. It's just we focus on quality fats. We're not serving red meat, but we get grass-fed beef, you know, from trusted sources. So it's just a matter, like we talk about balance over and over again, but we don't leave anything out.
I'd like to talk about the sourcing a little bit because, I mean, here at this radio station, but also in general, when you're talking about how the food is raised and where it comes from, I think mostly we're thinking about flavor or we're thinking about the environmental impact of production or that kind of thing. Can you talk a little bit about why that has anything to do with nutrition, Christy? I mean, first you, how
well,
how food
it just
is raised?
Like they say, you are what you eat. That goes with the animals too. So the first thing is to make sure when it comes to proteins that the animals have a healthy diet and that they're eating what they're meant to be eating. Mm-hmm. And
it's also, you talk about nutrition or nutrients inside of an animal. You know, if that animal is forced to grow very, very quickly, you know, you lose things, you lose nutrition, nutrients, you lose flavor, you know. So, you know, switching the lights on and off in a chicken coop to assimilate that night and day is happening quicker than it should, or feeding them antibiotics so that they grow, you know, quicker is great for, you know, some of those producers who don't care about anything other than money, but it's not great for us in terms of flavor, taste, or health, or nutrients.
Yeah, so when it comes to beef, for example, you know, animals that are grass-fed do have healthier fat composition than ones that are corn-fed. But even with produce, if we're sourcing produce from really far away that's been picked early and then ripened in transit, it's all of those nutrients won't have been developed in the same way that we would get if we sourced it locally and, you know, got it from the farmer's market that morning. So there are differences in nutritional quality. Yeah.
And
of
even
food.
Like going back to the grass-fed beef, I mean, you have a lot higher omega-3.
Right.
Omega-3 fatty acids than omega-6, which, you know, at the end of the day ends up being better for you than something like, you know, corn-fed.
And there's more antioxidants and more minerals in that kind of product as well. So
interesting.
It works on well on all ends.
We're almost at the end, but I have a question for you. Do you guys do a Thanksgiving dinner at the restaurant?
We actually don't usually do Thanksgiving dinner there.
Now, is there a reason for that?
He wants to give his staff the day off.
I mean, what would you do? What do you think about that?
Honestly, I don't think Thanksgiving dinner would be that difficult.
Right.
I think other things are probably a little bit more difficult.
Like brunch.
Brunch is probably harder just because, you know, when you think about breakfast or brunch as compared to dinner, everybody has, as an individual, has very set sort of ideas of what brunch should be.
Right.
Of course. You know, and they want their eggs and they want their bacon and they want
their hollandaise
and all those kind of things. And it's funny because if you look at, you know, breakfast as compared to dinner, you know, sort of it's harder to take, you know, to make a menu that's a little bit more esoteric, you know, because people really want some of the things that's what they want for breakfast or for brunch. So, but Thanksgiving, I think it would actually be easy because, I mean, when you think about it, you're just, you know, what do you have? Turkey.
Vegetables.
Turkey's very lean.
Turkey, right?
You know, you have lots of vegetables. It's all done family style. I mean, I think it would be pretty easy. Most likely, the reason we don't do it is just because we don't want to work on that day.
Right. Okay. Well, if you're intrigued, if your mouth is watering or your mind is racing, I'd recommend you go to the website. If you can't go to the restaurant, rougetomat.com. Is that?
Yeah, it's rougetomatnyc.com.
Okay. Rougetomatnyc.com.
Or if you're interested in SPE, you can go to SPE Certified. certified.com.
Okay, where you'll find the guidelines and actually see a little bit more about what you're doing, but also pick up this week's Time Magazine because there's some beautiful pictures of Jeremy's food. And do stop by if you have an interest in this, and even if you just want a good meal. I think it's an enlightening experience, and it really changes the way that you think about what going out to a restaurant means, or don't think about it in some ways. So thank you both for being with me.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Pleasure talking to you. Next week, we'll be back at 11 o'clock on Wednesday morning, and we'll be talking about taste, which is all we seem to talk about here in some form or the other. This is Mitchell Davis. You're listening to Taste Matters.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our programs archived on our website or by searching iTunes for Heritage Radio Network. You can find us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website. Thanks for listening.